Today on the Monocle Arts Review, we're talking books with Sarah Shaffy, online editor of The Bookseller. On our bookshelf today, two very different works. We have a collection of short stories by Shobha Rao, set around the 1947 partition of India and Pakistan, and a murder mystery for our age by Jason Arnop, revolving around the untimely death of a social media star. And later on in the show, we'll find out how to take your piece of fiction from page to screen. That's all to come on the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. Stay tuned. We're going to start things off with a set of short stories called An Unrestored Woman and Other Stories. This collection by Shobha Rao is made up of 12 paired stories that are all set in or around India, which play with ideas of barriers, boundaries, survival and love. Sarah Shaffy, welcome to the show. First of all, talk us through some of these stories.
These stories, like you say, take place mostly in and around India, although there are some that take place. There's one in America, for example. The key they all hold is that they all look at partition and the effects of partition in some way. So the partition of India into India and Pakistan was the largest peacetime migration of people, it is thought. But it was still a time that was fraught with violence, particularly, like in many conflicts, for women and children. And this collection, its focus is women and the effects on women, how they were treated, their vulnerabilities, and importantly, their strengths as well. So the stories that we read see women going through some awful, awful situations, and we see how they deal with them, and they all have to deal with them in their own way and largely on their own as well.
And which examples would you pick out? Which ones kind of spoke to you most, I guess?
The first two stories. The first story looks at a woman called Neela, who was married very, very young. And during partition, her husband dies, or she thinks he dies, in a train accident. The train is set on fire. And she goes to a refugee camp and meets another woman there. And that story is really about how women, or girls really, I mean, she was a teenager when she was married, find themselves alone in the world, even when surrounded by people. It's a story about friendship and the breaking up of friendship as well. And the way that story connects with its paired story is very interesting. I don't want to spoil it, but it is completely different. And I think one of the things the author does really well is to take on lots of different tones in each pair of stories. So while characters sometimes go from one story to the next, it's not always in the way you're expecting. They're not always the main character in the second story. So you're kind of waiting to see how this all fits together.
I kind of wanted to talk about the structure, because that is really interesting, having 12 paired stories. First of all, how does she do that? And is it a different narrative voice? Is it a different narrator in each story? And what does that actually achieve, this device of pairing?
So a lot of the stories are in third person. There are a few that are in first person. As I said, the tones are quite different. I think pairing them means you can see how people's lives were affected. And I think that's the key here. This collection looks at how partition affected people's lives. And that wasn't simply in 1947, they got up and they moved to a different part of the country. This partition was something that affected their whole lives. So we might meet a character in one story who then in the second story, it's years and years and years later, but they're still affected by views held by their families who suffered violence and loss during partition. So we see those kind of after effects and those ripples. And I think that's what's great about the collection and about pairing these stories, because it's really about those long-term effects.
That's interesting. I mean, I guess it struck me as something that you associate with kind of classical literature, this idea that there's these great events and these mere mortals are kind of caught up in them. I mean, do you get the sense that these characters don't really have any agency from their own parts? I mean, are they in control of their lives, or are they being kind of swept along?
I think that's a really interesting point, because while I've spoken a lot about partition and that's the background to this story, it's very much in the background. The political, you know, the political events aren't explored. We don't go into parliament or into kind of official buildings to see what the decision makers are doing. This is very much about people. And those individuals that we meet, it's a combination of them being at the mercy of the situation that they're in, but there are many times when these people take control, and they take control in ways that are shocking, that are saddening as well. And there's some real kind of heartbreaking moments in there when you realise what these people, what these women did to survive and to get through and to kind of make sure their lives, the lives of their families, the lives of their children were the best that they could be. And I think it's important to note that while this is about this is a book about people that have suffered a lot, it's also a book about people that survived as well.
Interesting. An Unrestored Woman and Other Stories by Shobha Rao is out now, published by Flatiron Books. Our second book today is centred around the mysterious and untimely death of a social media star. The Last Days of Jack Sparks by Jason Arnop is a chilling tale of a fictional character who at his time of death was researching a new book about the supernatural, which people begin to believe may have had something to do with his demise. Sarah, before we get onto the storyline, tell us a bit more about this character that we end up knowing.
Yeah, so this is a really interesting book. So Jack Sparks is, from the moment you meet him, and you meet him first through an introduction by his brother Alistair Sparks, is a very egotistical person. He's definitely a construct of the modern age. He's constantly taking selfies and posting them to Twitter. It's all about how many people are retweeting him, how many people are looking at his YouTube videos, and it's all very me, me, me. Everything's about me, and he's a larger-than-life, rather selfish, rather unlikable man.
Okay. This seems to play quite heavily on Hermann Hesse's Steppenwolf, which came out in the 1920s and looked at the human condition at the start of the 20th century. And it was kind of a reconstructed narrative based on real, in inverted commas, real files found after his death. Do you think this novel is trying to do something similar with the 21st century, looking at the human condition of people growing up now?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what struck me throughout reading this was that it is very much about the world we live in now and how we're all connected, how our lives are all recorded for posterity or until the internet stops working. And I love the way this novel played with those kind of constructs. So it's really a book within a book. So what we're reading is Jack Sparks's book that he wrote before his death and how that all unfolds, and this kind of study of the modern age and of modern man or woman, obviously man in this case because we're talking about Jack, but it's all wrapped up in a thriller and a horror story, a bit of a crime novel. There's kind of a lot of different genres coming together, and it's in some ways a ghost story as well.
And who's telling the story? So it's Jack writing his own book, but it's got this kind of preface written by his brother.
Yeah, so his brother introduces the book, and so we know from the beginning that Jack died in mysterious circumstances, that before his death he witnessed an exorcism in Italy, of which he mocked publicly on social media, of course, and that also there was a YouTube video. We don't know what was in that YouTube video right away. And then we go into Jack's book, and we're very much, which is very much told in two parts. And his brother, the character of his brother, introduces, when in his introduction, says that he wanted both parts included because you can see how different Jack was. So we know something's going to happen. Jack's book does contain notes to his editor and a few footnotes from his brother as well to kind of explain things. So it's a collaborative piece of non-fiction or maybe fiction. We don't quite know.
Okay, that's interesting. It's quite difficult, I guess, to distance Jack Sparks from Jason Arnop. But if we try and look at Jason Arnop and what he's trying to say, do you think this is, is he being critical of the kind of the social media age, or is he just warning us of the dangers? What do you think this book actually trying to say?
I think in some ways it's a satire. It's not, I don't think we're necessarily being warned of the dangers. I think we're all well aware that we can live too much of our lives not in the real world, and that we need to connect more. But I think there's definitely a set of mocking of those types of people that do take a picture of every meal that they eat and, you know, make sure that they're soliciting comments on everything they do. And I think the warning is about relying too much on people you don't know for validation of who you are. And I think there's that line that Jack crosses into kind of needing other people to G him up.
Okay, I see. The Last Days of Jack Sparks by Jason Arnop is out now, published by Orbit Press. Thank you very much to my guest Sarah Shaffy for joining us on the show. Now, to end today's show, we're going to learn about book adaptation. On this week's edition of Culture on Monocle 24, Robert Bound was investigating how you adapt a book for the screen. He invited Charmaine Lovegrove, co-founder of Dialogue Scouting Book-to-Screen Consultancy, and writer Philip Meeks into the studio to discuss both the creative and business sides of book adaptations and which books make good viewing.
Yeah, well, I think what I love about adapting is you're taking something that works as a fantastic piece of art and then starting to turn it into something else which will perhaps work in its own right. I think what I look for, I'm not a big believer in, you get told you've got an authored voice, I'm not a big believer in all of that. It all seems a bit sort of strange to me. But I think you've got to have something that chimes with your imagination. So at the moment I'm developing a radio project and I found I sort of spend hours on Amazon looking and Goodreads looking for obscure books that are out of print that I can buy for £2.81 and sort of frantically read. And I found this series of books by a British author called Harry Keating, and they're the Inspector Gotte books. And I just thought they were phenomenal and a wonderful domestic political books. So then you think, well, where would this work? And you have to always have your awareness of budgets and money. And I just thought this would work brilliantly on radio. You would capture the period. You would capture the nature of the stories, which are not necessarily thrill a minute. And so that's why I took that idea to radio, and I'm currently developing them in that context.
So you can imagine straight away, you're not reading it, and you say you trawl the internet looking for books
yes.
that you can buy. But I mean, are you looking for the synopses of books? Are you looking for the very bare bones of the story?
No,
are you
I
looking
have
for
to
character?
I look for a character and an yeah. idea in a synopsis, and then I read the book, and it's just whether or not, as I read it, I can see it, or I can see a version of the story emerging from it. And that's how I have a list of books that I would like to tackle.
Okay.
And I've done a bit of work working with companies, going specifically to find, for example, new routes into crime. And it's just, you sort of develop a bit of a reputation as a writer in certain areas. And that seems to be where I've got a bit of a reputation at the moment. So I like having a bit of a reputation.
Just a bit of a reputation.
Just a little bit of a reputation.
Charmaine, does that sort of chime with you? We should say, actually, that your company works in a very interesting way. Maybe you'd like to set that up for our listeners, because it's maybe as Ben Wheatley said in that clip we heard, he just pulled the book off the shelf. Philip sitting next to you, is always looking for stories, but you kind of do it the other way around.
Yeah, so it's a little bit of the two processes between pulling the book off the shelf and also sort of searching. But the point in which I'm coming from is working directly in my company. We're the only company in Europe that just does this, which is to really find what the producers are looking for and to spend time with the producers and work as their kind of external literary development team. So what we do is we go in every week, we speak to the producers, we find out what's on their slate, what they're working on, what they're interested in, what has interested them over the weekend, the Sunday papers, and then we go out to publishers and agents, and we read, and we just demand to read everything that comes out on our sort of wish list of books that our producers want to make.
Okay, well, that's a really interesting way of doing business, I guess. And you're looking for stories that exist, that are out there in the public consciousness, or producers are, and you're looking to back that up to find some literary way that exists, and then sort of back engineer a movie script out of a novel that exists of a news story that's sort of out there in the ether.
Exactly.
That's quite a niche you found for yourself.
It is the niche of the niche. And so I got into this from being a bookseller. And, the best thing about being a bookseller is that anyone comes into your bookshop and they ask you for a book and they say, it's got a red cover and it's set in China. And then they tell you about it and you're like, actually, it's blue and it's a blue cover and it's set in India. And so, that's the kind of quick fire you need to be a bookseller that I felt was not as appreciated as it should be within the publishing industry. So as the demise of bookshops came about, unfortunately, I moved to Berlin, opened a bookshop, started working for UFA, and then it's kind of continued from there. I met my business partner, Toby Coventry, and we basically sidelined this area of understanding exactly what it is that producers want. And what we do is that we bring the books and we bring the stories, and they will sometimes not be published. They will sometimes just be out on submission. submission, but we'll get like the hot buzz of what's coming out between London, New York and LA, and also internationally. We'll know what broadcasters are looking for. You know, it's a very, very fickle thing that changes week to week. So
this is amazing. So you have a weekly consultation with the producers you have. That's kind of amazing. That's very reactive. People, I think, would be surprised to hear that it is that fast-paced, and that, you know, somewhat a book that they were considering 1 week will not be cutting the mustard the week afterwards.
Absolutely. And, you know, there'll be so many different layers to that. And I think that you can say, Philip, that when you're meeting with development producers, that, you know, we were talking earlier and saying that they change their mind. And it depends on what happened at breakfast.
And if you want to hear the full conversation with Charmaine Lovegrove and Philip Meeks, then be sure to tune in to episode 232 of Culture with Robert Bound on monocle.com/radio. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. This show was produced by Holly Fisher and researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow to talk film, but for now, goodbye from me and thanks very much for listening.